AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI SureTrack. Proper grain storage management leads to increased profit. With in-bin monitoring, you can hold grain, improve quality, reduce storage costs, and more. Bin Manager delivers all of that with automated bin monitoring from AGI SureTrack.
Corn, soybeans, and wheat lower to start the week, although soy oil is showing a little strength, so there may be some structure for beans to work from. Cattle futures are higher after Friday's report, and lean hogs still trying to sort themselves out. Chips away, but the show must go on, and it will, if I have anything to say about it. Live from the dough stage of an oatmeal cookie week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we'll talk with Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Then it's Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson, and later Lon Fromm talks Farm Journal Field Days. And in a few moments, Kirk Hins from BAMWX, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, join me in welcoming pro farmer policy guru Jim Wiesmeyer. Jim, good morning, buddy.
I think I just talked to you on my podcast, Signal to Noise. Thanks for the help.
Absolutely, Signal to Noise. A great conversation. Lots going on, but not a whole lot of what we would call news unless... See, now Chip usually throws in... I called this an oatmeal cookie. In fact, the dough stage of an oatmeal cookie week because there's no Chip. You get it? You see what I did there? No. Hopefully
well, in my reporting this morning, I saw a, and this is a real product, a donut peach, and they're really good.
Really?
Yeah.
See, now I can't get
my head
around where you put the pit in a deal. If it's shaped like a donut, where does the pit go?
Well, it's shaped like without the hole, but that's where the pit is, right there.
Okay. Yes. All right. Oh, I'd like to try these. You get all the good stuff out on the East Coast, I tell you. We don't get anything like that around here.
Well, we don't get a good baseball team because I had time to write a special report because the Nationals, I can't even remember the last time they won a game.
Well, I have no idea how the Cubs or the Pirates, the Giants, the Mainlanders. I don't even know what's going on. But I don't follow baseball. But it's good that you bring it up because I know Chip would have said something about baseball, but I'm going to just jump the tracks immediately here on AgriTalk. I'm so glad everyone's tuned in. Jim, while we've got you here, you mentioned that report that you were talking about, and it's a pretty big deal. You've already got some attention from it, from some USDA folk, and you know what? I tell you what, your report about USDA estimates and forecasts. Take us back because you're no spring chicken when it comes to the USDA. Take us back to the days of yore when news copy was delivered via dictation over the telephone. USDA reports came out in the afternoon rather than the morning. Give us just a little bit of a history lesson there for us newbies.
Sure. I remember going down to the basement of the South Building at USDA. I remember the room quite well, 0054, where that's where the lockup was. And we just had a line there and we had a clock. And when it hit 3 o'clock at that time, Eastern time, we had an open phone line and Reuters, FWAN, our firm at the time, Bloomberg, etc. We all voiced in the crop numbers and S&D numbers and the copy, people back in this case, Cedar Falls for Oster Communications got them out on our various outlets. And I remember also when the day when we didn't have a world board, that was really created in the mid 1970s. So different USDA officials wouldn't comment on forecast, whether they had a one clearinghouse. So that's all in the report. But I think a history is needed because a lot of people, especially since the social programs have come out, Facebook, et cetera, I think you can learn a lot from the history.
Well, tell us a little bit about the report. What were your findings? What are you reporting?
Well, we interviewed NASS people, top economist, Seth Meyer at USDA, on the record, farmer top economist, Rob Johansson is going to be in a follow-up report, and they gave their time and analysis, and they were quite willing to listen to areas where the industry and others had for possible improvements. They talked about some sensitive issues such as the China total corn import estimates, that's on the World Board side, and Canada, how they may be behind the curve on, you know, Canada's wheat crop, and the different tools that NASS has and maybe need to use in the future. So we aired that out. In fact, I call it a paper now, Davis, because it's 17 pages, believe it or not. This is my bit to begin the process of the grain industry, farmers, lawmakers asked me to do this, actually, and other people to get into the debate on how to improve USDA's estimates and forecast and make it still the gold standard that it still is.
Not a ton of time here. We got to get to Kirk Hinz, but in your report, the very first line, there's a byline, NASS and World Board willing to discuss, act on changes if needed. Funding is the key issue. If they're mentioning funding, it almost feels like they're actually serious.
Yeah. And this is where funding is indeed needed. There were some people who told me the move to Kansas City, they didn't say it was good or bad, but they said initially that did put more work on the World Board because it put a lot of people either retired or left to go to Kansas City, and it left a vacuum and World Board people had to pick it up.
Jim, we need to talk much, much more about this. And listeners, I'll clue you in to where you can take a look at the report when it's available. Jim, stick around. We'll have Senator Grassley coming up in the next segment. Right now, I need to get to Kirk Hinz from BAMWX. Kirk, somebody turned the broiler from low to high, and it's getting hot out here in the Midwest and going to get hotter, as I understand it. Your thoughts?
Yeah. This has been our expected time frame. The last couple of weeks we've been on the show talking about where we're going to see widespread 95 to 105 here across pretty much the entire plains. I would say especially through Thursday to Friday is going to be the warmest of those temperatures here. There'll be a little bit of a front late week. And on top of the record heat that is looking possible, you know, especially getting into Wednesday, I am concerned getting late week into the weekend that there is a sneaky storm cluster in there that looks to impact some locations in Nebraska, Iowa, could be Northeast Kansas, Missouri, even portions of the Ohio Valley. And obviously things being sensitive with what happened last year, we're on heightened level of alert to just watch for impacts. There's a higher level of concern for damaging winds. And it's something I think that needs to be on everybody's radar.
For sure. Now, I want to take you back to earlier this spring, late winter, and you at BAMWX have been talking about the potential for a hot, dry, at least spell, at least a season. Is this what you had in mind, or is this going on longer than maybe you thought?
No, this is definitely in line with those thoughts. In fact, I don't think it's going to be the last of it. I think as we're getting, especially back into mid-August, I think we're going to see another return of this. It's in a pretty similar area than what we expected, especially the Western Plains and the Western United States. I do think there can be a tendency, though, like I mentioned, getting into August for that to start bleeding east. So how far east we're not sure of yet, but like you mentioned, I this is kind of that time frame we have started to, you know, anticipate some of that big heat. And those drier conditions, too, a lot of folks are dry along with the heat and low relative humidity. I think we're going to see those evapotranspiration rates quite high, too.
Kirk Hinz, BAMWX, thank you for the weather update. I appreciate it. And we'll keep an eye on the skies. There's one thing we know, when it starts to get hot like this, sometimes the weather can be volatile. Yep. So eyes on the skies, everybody. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk. I've got Jim Wiesmeyer in the wings here. We're going to open the chute and listen in on a conversation between himself and Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. You're tuned to AgriTalk, and I appreciate it. We'll be back right after these words.
When it comes to Total Farm Solutions, AGI has you covered. AGI offers complete systems and solutions with industry-leading products to meet your needs. From Westeel and MFS storage bins to Nico dryers, Westfield augers, Batco conveyors, Hutchinson grain loops, to SureTrack for seed selection, planning, grain management, and marketing. AGI has the solution for you. Visit aggrowth.com for more information.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD TV. Sounds from Jim Wiesmeyer's 8-track player back when he was reporting from USDA in Washington, D.C. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk with you this morning. Thanks for tuning in. Jim Wiesmeyer here to help out. We brought in the big guns to talk to Senator Grassley. Good morning, Jim. Thanks for popping up.
Anytime.
And on the line right now, we've got Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. Senator Grassley, thank you for spending some time with us, sir.
I'm glad to be with you, of course. Always to talk agriculture is very important, so I appreciate this opportunity, and I'll try to answer your questions as best I can.
Absolutely. You know, Jim, let me place this in your capable hands. Go.
Okay. You know, Senator, I want to first talk about your farm. It's in New Hartford, if I recall, and how's it going? How's the crops?
Yeah. Well, we have only had, at least at my farm, we've only had 8 4/10 inches of rain during May and June, whereas last year we had about 17 or 18 inches. You would find in the Waterloo area, based upon reports from Waterloo, that we've had the least rain in 100 years except for three other years. And so we are very dry.
Okay. You know, there's going to be a couple of hearings this week in Congress. I know on the Senate Judiciary Committee is one of them on meat processing concentration and other issues mainly. What do you expect to come out of that hearing, and what do you hope for?
We expect to make a case that four big companies having 80% of the slaughter of cattle, and that the spot market person doesn't have an opportunity to market when he wants to market and get a fair price, to say that there's too much concentration and there's not enough room for Iowa producers to get their cattle to market. And it isn't just Iowa, it's throughout the Midwest generally, because in other parts of the country and in most slaughterhouses, less than 20% of the daily kill can be available to the spot market, and as a result, they tend to be residual suppliers and get less for their cattle than people that market ahead of time, or the companies themselves killing their own livestock, and then they can't deliver maybe for a month. And so this is a very unfair situation, and that's what I intend to do it. And I hope it makes a case for my bill or Fisher's bill or something in between that reserves more market each day for the spot market.
Well, now, Secretary Vilsack, in a Bloomberg television interview, I think it was Friday, signaled that some additional information was going to come out to help livestock producers deal with some issues. Have you talked with the secretary at all about this or other issues?
I've asked him to look into it and see if he could support legislation. I have not heard back yet, but I think what the secretary is talking about is he's already taken some action with money that's already available to him to incentivize packers to set up more slaughter so there's more markets available for the spot producer.
Gotcha. Now, I'm going to go a little lightning round here on you, Senator. We've done that in the past many years ago when I was a beat reporter. Will a bipartisan infrastructure bill come together and pass the Senate? If so, when?
Well, there's some talk that there might be something available today or tomorrow, but I won't know that until 5 o'clock this afternoon. So in the meantime, I can tell you that I'm just speaking for Chuck Grassley now, but I think there's a lot of unanimity on this among Republicans that on the expenditure side, the program that's put together in the bipartisan bill is a pretty good program. So it really narrows down to the fact that do we have, how are we going to pay for it, and is it paid for? And that may make a big difference whether I would vote for it or not. But everything I've heard up till now on the programs that are in the bill, I think I could vote for it.
Okay. And do you see the Democrats coming out with the part two rolled into probably budget reconciliation, the human side of infrastructure? Do you see them having the likely 50 votes that they're going to need to, you know, clear it with, because under the assumption maybe no Republican will vote for it?
I think they're going to have to do that to satisfy Pelosi, and I don't think they're going to get any Republican support for that. And it's really reckless spending when you consider that we're already in inflation and another $3.5 billion or $1 trillion is going to feed pour gasoline on those inflation fires that we know are true now. And I don't want to go through what I did in the 1970s and early 80s yes. with 12% or 13% unemployment.
Yeah. What are the chances, Senator, that we're going to understand? What are the chances that we're going to see major tax increases become law this year relative to the stepped up basis, capital gains tax increase, and the death tax?
If 50 Republicans stick together and it's done under the 60 vote rule, we will not have any changes like your question suggests. If Democrats stick together and they use it in reconciliation, and it's possible to do that in reconciliation, then you'd lose stepped up basis, cut the estate tax in half. But I can't believe that Democrats would go along with it. And I've read in media some Democrats saying they couldn't go along with it. So I don't think it's anything to worry about. But who knows, in this town, anything can happen. But right now, I feel pretty good that we'll keep stepped up basis and keep the $11 billion estate tax. Another thing that could hurt the same thing would be raising the capital gains tax to 43%. That would be very harmful for the same reason.
What were you surprised about some reports that Representative Axne endorsed the Biden tax increases?
Yeah, I'm very surprised because I thought she had raised some questions within her own group about stepped-up basis that she couldn't go along with it. Are you telling me that she's going to go along with those tax increases?
I didn't hear this from her, but I've been reading some reports, and that's why we want to get her back on AgriTalk to hear it from herself. So I thought I'd raise that as a possibility, but we're going to confirm it ourselves. But apparently, she said something to that effect.
You should do. Iowans need to know, both from Republicans and Democrats, who's for doing away with a stepped-up basis, doing away, cutting in half the estate tax exemption, and who's in favor of a capital gains tax of 43%. That would be catastrophic to farming and small business.
Okay. Well, in the time we have left, Senator, one of your favorite subjects, ethanol, E15, et cetera. Where are we going on the year-round E15? Is there a chance we could get codified that into law in a must-pass bill coming up yet this year?
I'd be very afraid to do that if we got something dealing with the renewable fuel standard out on the Senate floor. I would be fearful that we wouldn't lose ground instead of gaining ground. So I think the battle's all within the EPA. And as of now, maybe 6 months from now, I'll tell you differently, but as of now, I think that this administration is going to be favorable to ethanol and biofuels generally.
Okay, so you think that they'll be light on handling waivers in the future, that they'll be lenient, that they won't award many waivers to the RFS?
I sure hope so. On the other hand, I'd have to say I'm disappointed in the Supreme Court and two other lower court decisions that have been made lately that have taken away with a lot of stuff that we had going for us for ethanol on the waivers and things like that.
Are you concerned about the administration's focus on electric vehicles at the expense of biofuels?
Yes, it would ruin by 2030 if they go every car's soul's got to be electric vehicle. We wouldn't have 43,000 ethanol jobs in Iowa, and we wouldn't have the plants functioning. The only thing that might keep us alive is if they're sustainable aviation fuel, because they know that airplanes have to have liquid fuel, and the extent to which some of our alternative energy and biofuels can be used for that would be the only thing that I can see sustaining our ethanol industry and biofuels industry at the position it is right now.
And my last topic, Senator, on WHIP Plus, will you push to have that extended for 2020 and 2021 crops, 2020 being the derecho in your home state of Iowa and 2021 for some of the problems we're already seeing?
Are you talking about disaster relief?
Yes, ag disaster relief, WHIP Plus.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD-TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD-TV.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, lower on the grain side, if there's a glimmer of hope, it's in the soybean oil. Is that limiting pressure on the beans this morning?
Well, soy oil is trying to do it alone right now, Davis. And, you know, it's working to the upside, but everything else is working lower. So whether or not it's limiting seller interest, I can say that the soybeans have worked well off their intraday lows so far, but we're still trading around a nickel lower here mid-morning. Same is true for the corn market, both in working off its lows and the level down about a nickel lower right now. You know, the spring wheat market continues to pull back there. And, you know, more signs, technical signs, I guess, that a top is in place, at least a short-term top. So we'll have to watch that. Now, keep in mind, the Wheat Quality Council HRS tour is happening this week through primarily through North Dakota. It gets into some areas of Minnesota and South Dakota, but primarily North Dakota. So that'll be a data point to watch as we progress through the week.
Hot and dry forecast for the next at least couple of days over the Midwest. The market isn't concerned.
Well, I think it's more that cooler temps coming next week and the potential for some rains along with those cooler temps. So we'll see. That's kind of trading the broader forecast than the immediate forecast.
Quickly, we got some strength in the cattle.
Yeah, and I think that ties back to last Friday. Cattle inventory report showed the beef cow inventory down about 2% from a year ago. So that's some price support there. The calf crop wasn't projected to be quite as big. That supported for feeders along with the weakness in the corn market. And then hogs are trading to the downside so far this morning.
Brian Grady, thanks for that. We've got a recorded conversation between Chip and Machinery Pete up next.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Machinery Pete here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Yes, it is Chip. I am out of the office, but late last week, I caught up with Greg Peterson so that we could have a conversation about what is going on in the used machinery market. We're going to bring that to you right now. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Chip. How are you doing?
Doing real good, real good. You know, I was going to save this for the end of the show, but I'm going to mention it right now, right up front. You are going to be back on AgriTalk tomorrow morning with Davis for a live conversation with a couple of your sources, with a couple of the people that you rely on for information on a regular basis, and have a deep dive into the auction world tomorrow on AgriTalk, aren't you?
Yeah, looking forward to it. Kind of hit it from a different angle, like you say, a little deeper conversation from some of my contacts out across the country. So, yeah, looking forward to it, and always fun to be able to talk with your great AgriTalk listeners out there, Chip.
You bet, you bet. Okay, let's get into what's going on last week in the auction world, and you know how we're going to start it off. Pete's pick of the week. What do you got?
Well, I pretty much had to pick this tractor this week, Chip. I think folks are still talking about it. I wrote a blog Thursday when it sold, but there was a 1991 John Deere 4955 tractor. Of course, a lot of love for that 55 series from the late 80s, early 90s. And this sold on the Ed and Joe Harder's Farm Retirement Auction last Thursday in Hartley, Iowa, out in the northwest part of the state. Great sale by our friends at Vanderwerf and Associates. Really wish I could have been there to cover the sale, but I was traveling, but was monitoring the sale. And they had a 91 model 4955, 6,806 hours on it. So, you know, decent low hours, not crazy low, but it was sharp. And it brought $84,750, which, I mean, Chip, the highest I'd ever seen on a 4955 before that was $77,000. Okay. And very similar to, like, we've been talking about. Talk about the timing of that former record. Yeah. That was August of 13, Bird Island, Minnesota. And
eight
interestingly, and that one had 4,400 hours on it, a 90 model. So again, 6,800 hours, and it brought $84,750. And I was listening to the bidding online. My buddy Rich on the call there, and it just was incredible. The bidding just, it never stopped. It kept going and going. And I'm watching online, and it wound up going to an online bidder from Nevada. So there you are, sitting in northwest Iowa. And bidders were from Missouri. They're from all over the place. It goes to Nevada, so it's just incredible.
Okay, now for those from Iowa, do you mean the state of Nevada or the town of Nevada?
As in state of.
Okay.
State of Nevada. So I think they had a chuckle on site. They were maybe thinking it was going to Vegas or something, but that I do not know. But somebody in Nevada just bought themselves a heck of a 4955, and again, $84,750, not done in a vacuum. There were tons of people that wanted this thing. And really, the whole sale, like all these sales we've been reporting on, the whole sale was strong from top to bottom, so not just the 4955.
Well, yeah, to beat that record price that was set 8 years ago, and to beat it by by almost $8,000, Greg, it's more than two people were in on that bidding. I mean, there were many people that wanted that tractor.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking, 10% over a record price. And of course, I posted it in the blog, a lot of discussion, people talking inflation, which obviously is a factor. I mean, however you view that, people won't just prefer the older models. There's validity there. You know, commodity prices are up. Folks have a little more money. It's all a piece of it.
Yep.
But it's, again, $84,750. But just a couple other highlights, Chip.
Yeah.
They also had now to the point of the, the pre-def, pre-tier 4, which, is a factor. But they had a 15 model 8320R on the sale. Very nice, 1,607 hours. That went for $230,750. Highest auction price I've ever seen on a 15 model 8320R. And again, not by a little bit. The previous high was $207,000 5.5 years ago in North Dakota. So that's the point I need to keep making here is, yes, the pre-def, pre-tier 4, they are definitely in demand and have gone up. But guess what? So are the 13, 14, 15, 16 models in good shape, just like that one.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about another 10% beat.
Exactly, and another 10%. So people say, well, how much are used? How are used machinery values doing machinery, Pete? At the top of the market, there you go. They just jumped, you know, 10%, which is a big jump. And how about this one on the sale, Chip? Gets lost in the wash, but they had an 81 model 4640 John Deere, 4,534 hours, so low hours for that age.
Right.
But 40 years old, that brought $36,000. And now this is interesting. So imagine you're in my chair the 32 years. Imagine how many 4640s you've seen sold.
Oh, geez.
I mean, you go to machinerypeat.com, click on auction price data. You can count them. It's a zillion. 36K is tied for the third highest ever. And we saw the second highest one earlier this month, July 10th, Humphrey, Nebraska, $50,000. That one had 3,273 hours. And we also saw on July 8th in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, a 4640 go for 35 and a quarter. So this month in July, we've seen three of the four highest 4640s ever. So that's the market for good condition tractors right there.
Holy smokes. That's wild, man. That is wild. Okay, we need to move on, though, because I know the Steffes Group had a big week last week, right?
They did. They had a ton of sales. I guess the one that really popped for me, Chip, was one they had on Tuesday, last Tuesday, up in northwest Minnesota. And just to show you, this is not just all John Deere tractors or Case IH, but it's all makes. So they had two record prices on versatile tractors, a 2015 550 DT on track. So again, a 15 model, you know, not pre-def, not pre-tier 4, his beautiful tractor, only 874 hours, but brought $258,000 hard cash, highest I've ever seen on a 550 DT. And beyond that, the one that really got me was an 02 versatile 2360 four-wheel drive, 3,166 hours. That brought $99,500. That just dusted the previous high record price on that one. They also had a pair of New Hollands that sold well, an 8870A, 4,300 hours for $60,500, and a 2000 model 8870, just under 3,900 hours at $57,500. So great sale there Tuesday, and folks, check out the Steffes Group, steffesgroup.com. Got seven machinery auctions this week, two closing today, one right now, one tonight, and a huge sale on Wednesday. A live sale, their Ag Iron event in West Fargo. It's got 11 combines on that auction. So check it out at steffesgroup.com, folks.
So there's another test for the combine market coming, which has been holding up and passing every test so far this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, again, if its condition is good, good condition units are, they're up. Not quite as much as tractors, but they're definitely up. And I looked at that on that sale on Wednesday, the Ag Iron event for Steffes Group, a number of combines with a few years on them in good shape, so kind of right in that sweet spot. So, yeah, that will be a good test on Wednesday, Chip, for sure.
No doubt, no doubt. Okay, you know, it's not just the middle of the country that is seeing these high auction prices or strong auction prices, because we've talked about some in the southeast. Let's go to the northeast in Pennsylvania. What do you got from there?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half or so, I think it was July 14th, northeast Pennsylvania, right in the absolute corner of northeast Pennsylvania, a farm auction by our friends at Fraley Auction Company. Two more record prices on New Holland tractors, a little smaller horse, so different geography, different horsepower. But they had a New Holland T6-115. It was like new, 343 hours, brought $83,000, by far the highest I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they also had a New Holland TS-135A, 2,500 hours at $66K. So, again, two more record prices in the color blue there. So
crazy, crazy. Now, you mentioned some of the issues that are at play in creating, helping to create this strong auction market.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one thing that we need to continue to talk about is the availability of new, right, Greg? I mean, it feels like it's still pretty tight.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the whole chip factor, I mean, or if you get down to a planter and, you know, you were trying to order a planter this year and, you know, your dealers just, they only had X, they could have sold more, but there just wasn't product. So that's you're right. A huge piece of this puzzle with rising used values is you know, the rising price of new, and then I can't get new. And then again, on the used lot, the stuff everybody wants, there just aren't that many of. And again, I would just caution folks that, you know, as hot as prices are right now, just wait till year end when people, you know, tax minimization is top of mind for iron purchases. So again, if you need it, I would try to get it before we hit that late October into December, because, or wait that out, because yeah. I think that market unbelievably could even be hotter.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask you what your take was on the market for the end of the summer and into the fall, but you just gave it to us. And Greg, the tax issues.
I don't
issues,
do that lightly. I
know you don't.
It makes me uncomfortable.
I know
that, but the data points are just lining up so strongly that's the way it's pointed. So that's
good
from
stuff,
the gut, folks.
Good stuff, Greg. Hey, man, have fun on the show tomorrow with Davis.
Yeah,
it's always a fun conversation with you, man. We really appreciate it. Okay, Davis will be right back. He's got a conversation with Lon Fromm.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Well, I wish I had some shoes. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal Davis Michelson here at the helm in Chip's stead. He's out for this week, but he'll be back next week. In the meantime, we've got an awful lot to talk about. I want to bring up Farm Journal Field Days. It's coming up. It's roughly a month away. A month away. So it's coming up quick. Some of the elements that they've got going on, U.S. Farm Report with the lovely and talented Tyne Morgan. She'll talk with panelists Arlen Suderman from StoneX, Tanner Emke from CoBank, Drew Moore from Advanced Trading. Then we've got Andrew McCray, the host of American Countryside Radio, the Total Town Makeover, Rethink Your Business, Community, and Home with Andrew McCray. It's a book that he's written. It's a really great idea. I've talked to Andrew about this many times, and it's definitely something that you're going to want to check out. And you can register for this event. Go to farmjournalfielddays.com for more information and for registration. And as an added bonus, Thursday, August 26th, a live concert event featuring Easton Corbin. Now, that'll be rebroadcast in September, but you can check it out live on site. You just got to register at farmjournalfielddays.com. And speaking of Farm Journal Field Days, Lon Fromm is joining us today. Lon, good morning. You're serving as one of the
good
hosts
morning.
For Farm Journal Field Days. How are you doing?
That's what they're telling me. It'll
that's
be
outstanding.
To both yeah. be at it and to host. But we're used to having guests here on the farm.
Well, let's talk about your farm. Tell me about your operation. What are you up to? Start us with where you're located.
Okay, far northwest Kansas. My farm's okay. actually on I-70, and we're about 50 miles from Nebraska and 50 miles from Colorado. Elevation's about 3,000 feet here.
Okay.
And we get about 20 inches of rain.
All right. So that's something that you've got to manage on a yearly basis, I suppose.
Yeah, we are an irrigated farm as well. Okay. We're 85% corn and dryland corn and about 15% wheat. We've been on this headquarters location for 50 years and the old farmstead for 100 years.
Okay.
And we've been 100% no-till for, this will be our 24th year, strip-till on irrigated, but strictly no-till on everything else.
Mm-hmm. And have you ever hosted a live country or Western concert event on the premises, sir?
No, I don't think so. We've had a couple weddings with bands. That's what made me think that maybe we could handle it in there's a large airplane hangar with an airstrip, and so I might ask the performers if they've ever played on a runway before.
That sounds well, cool.
But yeah, we've had a couple weddings there, so we think we can make it work.
Well, talk to me about that a little bit. And you mentioned you've had some tours there and everything. What's that all about?
Oh yeah, we've had a lot of visitors over the years. It's really part of my vision and mission. To educate and share. And so whenever there's a leadership class or a tour from outside the United States, or there's been, it seems like there's someone more than every month here. So we're used to hosting and giving tours and telling about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have in my notes here that you
You joined up the farm there in 1986.
Go ahead.
Clarify that for me. I have joined in notes here, but that seems like a weird word.
Yes, it's joined. It's actually when my father passed away unexpectedly.
Okay.
And so I found myself in charge of all of this at a fairly young age. I think I was 27. And everyone else was on the farm was in their 20s, too. So, mm-hmm. so we had a lot of opportunities to teach ourselves and to not do things the way that Dad did or Grandpa did mm-hmm. or we've always done.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, I think it was easier to adopt and change and explore than it might have been if we'd had we've always done it this way, you know, mm-hmm. with Granddad.
Well, and that can be one of the major rubs and even sometimes resulting in rifts among families Dad, Uncle, Grandpa, whoever has always done it this way. And I've got some things that I'd like to try. I think we could do a little bit differently, but the older generation just isn't willing to try some new things. So you had to navigate that at a fairly young age, 27. That's pretty young.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so this will be 35 years. that I've been at the helm. And in that time, we've gone from, everyone all of us know how many acres. I finally gave up, we'll just say. So there were 6,000 at that time, and there's 36,000 today.
Oh,
with
gosh.
80 center pivots and almost 4 million bushels of grain storage with dryers.
Mm-hmm. So that's not the sort of thing you can just kind of keep an M around and just sort of here and there keep at it over the year. You've got quite the operation going. How have things evolved since 86 when you took the wheel, and how did all that come together? What are some of the highlights?
You know, one of my highlights would be going back to get my master's degree. I'm really big on education, continuing education.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a course or a conference, one of us is going to be at it, or everyone has had the opportunity to go. When I was 40 years old, I went back to Kansas State University and got my Master of Agribusiness degree, and that made all the difference in the world. I don't think I could be doing this mm-hmm. had I not done that. And that's right when laptop computers had come out, and I went to college with Hollerith punch cards in computer
mm-hmm.
science.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big leap that we had to make, and we kind of made it all at once. So glad.
Yeah, what was the most useful takeaway from that course of study for you?
What's a fixed cost or a sunk cost and a fixed cost and a variable cost? And
mm-hmm.
thinking of everything in that nature, but especially the concept of sunk cost, I use a lot when we're trying to make decisions and look at things.
So Farm Journal Field Days, coming to your farm, what excites you the most about that? What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, meeting people and sharing, of course. And maybe I'll meet some people that I've heard about, and I finally get to meet them in person. I think that's probably the biggest fun surprise when you finally get to put a name with a face and have a personal discussion with someone. But sharing, and part of sharing is us learning too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a great chance to involve my employees. They will all be giving tours and giving talks. And
that's outstanding.
they're actually pretty good at it. In fact, last time at the top producer conference, they went without me and did a presentation, which was so cool.
That is cool. Well, Lon Fromm, we sure appreciate you. We're looking forward to seeing your farm of Farm Journal Field Days. We'll be back this afternoon with Dwayne Bossy right here on AgriTalk.